And it is today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman on this Thursday afternoon. Well, today we begin with a discussion about how to regain our energy. Bonnie, you just went through a very grueling pledge drive, spent 12 or 14 hours a day at the station on the air pitching forever.
And I used that Red Bull.
And you seemed kind of, you didn't. No, you didn't.
No, I didn't.
Very good.
Maybe a little.
Not on yet. Sorry.
Maybe a little, no. Good to hear from you.
Maybe a little bit of Cuban coffee, though.
A little coffee. A little coffee. It's not always bad.
Well, Dr. George Zagridis joins us. He's the co-author of "Stop Feeling Tired: Mind, Body, Spirit Steps to Fight Fatigue and Feel Your Best." And he joins us from Dallas, Texas. Welcome to you, Dr. Zagridis.
Thank you, Joseph and Bonnie. This is an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you
so much for having me.
Come on, don't overdo it now.
You sound very energetic.
I am, and I did not drink a Red Bull before coming on.
Or let's see, what's another one? Monster Energy.
Monster Energy. All these horrible drinks that are doing terrible things to people.
Well, I thought before we looked at the problems caused by these so-called energy drinks, let's discuss the widespread problem of chronic exhaustion. How common is it, and what are the most prevalent causes, would you say?
Those fantastic questions, Bonnie. You know, we're all exhausted. Everybody is tired, worn out, burned out, all kinds of issues related to energy levels. And so I believe that we are dealing with a societal pressure here to burn the candle at both ends. And so we're sold on this concept from advertisers, marketing people, companies, that we have to have this, there's this need for speed, and that you'll be a whole lot happier and better at whatever you do if you will, you know, push, push, push. So I think we've got some interesting societal demands that are pressing people to try to do more than they really should be doing.
I think that most of us are aware of the fact that finding balance is the most important step toward feeling energized, but how do you find balance? It's so difficult in our society.
It is, and again, we get back to these, I believe, social demands in terms of being out of balance. Push, 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 squeeze more in, stretch your personal reserves to the limit. I believe, as a society, have unrealistic expectations about what we can do versus what we should do. So we should always keep balance in mind, and it is very difficult to do that these days. I wrestle with this all of the time, and as we get into the conversation here, I have some ideas in terms of helping people with that issue of balance.
How about in modern society, particularly after industrialization and artificial light, our circadian cycles are much different than they were years and years and eons ago.
Joseph, great point. Yes, and I believe that takes us into even an additional area of electronic gadgets interfering with our ability to follow a natural circadian rhythm. And so then what happens, everything gets thrown off, you're off cycle, you're tired when you get up, you don't feel refreshed, so then you start downing lots of coffee, lots of energy drinks, whatever it might be, a lot of sugar to try to get through the day, and then you feel good for a little bit, but then you crash, and then you have to do the cycle all over again. So I actually blame a lot of our current issues on electronic gadgets, and we've just had a flood of these things, these items in recent years, and I don't think we've caught up quite in terms of how to live with these items without them interfering with our rhythms in life.
Your book is heavily influenced by Eastern medicine and thought. What's your background in that area? It seems like you know quite a bit about it.
Well, I appreciate that, Bonnie. I am actually a family physician, so I'm a board-certified family physician, so a regular MD. I'm also a clinical psychologist, so I have a unique combination of credentials. Now, in the meantime, during all of my training, I spent time studying Eastern medicine. The reason being that in the West, medicine is very pathology-based. So we are always looking at, here's a problem, now let's fix it. But in the East, and I really appreciate this model, lifestyle is seen as paramount. So we try to prevent problems from occurring in the first place. So I like that approach, and I have a lot of patients I work with at these levels, especially diet and exercise, getting a good night's sleep, etc. So I trained for a while with a number of practitioners and learned a lot about the basic concepts and have been able to apply these in my medical and psychology practice. It's been a very exciting endeavor, I promise.
Dr. George Zagridis, tell us, many of us love to read in bed, but experts say that's not a great idea. Why?
It's interesting. Oftentimes when we read in bed, we are using a light, and the light convinces the brain that it's daytime. So it throws off the release of melatonin, which is one of the chemicals that helps people fall asleep. It's a chemical involved in the circadian rhythm. As well, when that's thrown off, the serotonin is not released as it should be, and it throws the person's sleep off. I am a very strong proponent of getting a good night's sleep. So one of the absolute best things people can do is wind things down before bedtime and avoid gadgets and avoid lights, etc. Very, very frequently now, people are checking emails, they're watching a variety of movies and things on their gadgets in bed, and naturally, as a consequence, many are complaining of difficulty sleeping, and so then again they're tired in the morning, and then they consume all this caffeine and energy drink, whatever, to get through the day, and then they crash, and then again they continue these activities at night. We refer to this as poor sleep hygiene, and I know hygiene sounds like you need to go take a bath, but it really involves very specific kinds of behaviors to avoid so that you can get a good night's sleep.
But don't some people actually relax watching television or reading? Doesn't it actually relax them? Or are you saying that it can't possibly because of the light factor and that it's actually stimulating the brain?
Right, and that's in many cases. Now, there are individuals that find relaxing by reading with a soft light, reading an actual book, not off of an electronic tablet, that can actually be relaxing. There's many times I've read a book until I, drop the book out of my hand and, falling asleep. But for those who are actually having issues with sleep and are having energy issues during the day that are potentially related to poor sleep, I would suggest trying a cold turkey on all of that. Try avoiding televisions and light, bright lights at least a couple of hours before bedtime, and then see if that makes a difference.
So in addition to good nutrition, which you speak about, and exercise, your book suggests psychological and spiritual solutions to imbalance. How do they relate to the state of fatigue?
That's a great question. I am all about integrating medicine and psychology to find healthy alternatives. I have found that intervening at mind and body and spirit is very critical in terms of coming at all of this from a holistic, whole body perspective. So not only is diet important, and again, I recommend a mostly plant-based diet whenever possible with lots and lots of water, exercise that somebody can do daily, but the cognitive part, I find, cannot be separated from good health. So I, as a psychologist, have found over many years and working with many, many patients that often the mind is where healing begins, that without changes in the mental approach to issues, that oftentimes the medical part or the physical part doesn't really improve. And I'd also say, too, that spiritually speaking, that people find spiritual practices to help round all of this out and are healthier and happier for it.
How about naps?
I am a strong proponent of naps on the condition that a person is not having trouble sleeping at night. If one is having insomnia, can't fall asleep, can't stay asleep, might want to look at the nap schedule and see what's involved in terms of not maybe napping quite so much. However, if you're having a normal regular cycle, everything is good, you sleep well at night, I'm a strong proponent of naps. I whenever possible will take a quick 5-10 minute power nap, and I just find myself really refreshed and rejuvenated and ready to hit things in the afternoon. Much, much better than downing a monster drink or what they've just come out with is something called Death Wish Coffee. And I'm horrified that a product like that is even being promoted on the market. Well, a nap is a lot healthier.
Well, we're still going to get to the energy drink things, but I just wanted to ask you, caffeine isn't always bad. I mean, they've done studies. I know we had somebody on recently that said that it decreases your risk of Alzheimer's coffee.
Yes, and coffee in moderation is absolutely not a problem, and there are apparent health benefits to that. I love my cup of Joe in the morning. It just nothing better in the morning to start the day out, have a nice cup of coffee. What the problem is when people are drinking 16 ounces of it at a time, 64 ounces of it a day, that's a huge issue. And then often with the caffeine comes all the sugar and the problems that are associated with that. I'll give you a quick example. I know of a patient who she drinks 10 or 12 mugs of coffee a day and then dumps a huge amount of sugar into the coffee and eventually gave herself a heart attack because what high amounts of coffee or caffeine cause heart arrhythmias or irregular heartbeats. And it's a very, very dangerous situation that you want to avoid. This is common with all kinds of stimulant drugs, very common with people who are addicted taking various drugs. Their heart goes out of whack, rhythm's off, and it can actually have fatal consequences. So moderation is great. You know, we're back to that whole concept of balance. Fantastic. Have a cup of coffee, couple cups of coffee a day. That's great. Try to avoid 64 ounces of Death Wish coffee.
And on that note, we're speaking with Dr. George Zagridis. He's a family physician, clinical psychologist, and an author. Stop Feeling Tired is the name of his latest book. We're going to take a short break on today's Topical Currents. Don't fall asleep, and we'll be right back.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Dr. George Zagridis. So, Doctor, let's talk a little bit about the particularly teenagers abusing these power drinks. There's no age restriction for purchase, I suppose.
It doesn't appear to be at this time, and there are quite a few children even, mostly teenagers, that are consuming these drinks as a way of, quote, getting high, unquote. A lot of adults use these as well. But I think right now there's considerable concern about young people consuming these beverages as a way of, keeping studying and keeping going.
I'm sorry, aren't they FDA approved? Are they FDA approved?
As far as I know, they have to be if they're out on the market. So I believe these are approved, as food substances. So there you go. They're out there.
So are these energy drinks in and of themselves a problem, or is it only when they're combined with alcohol or some of the drugs like you mentioned, or that I saw in a New York Times article that we had, Adderall or Ritalin?
Actually, combining these with any other substance, I believe, is dangerous. Alcohol, and there was the Four Loko, which was one of these drinks that contained alcohol as well as various psychotropic medications, stimulant medications. This is a disaster. What ends up happening, and again, there have been potential deaths from drinking these products. People end up with heart arrhythmias, as I had mentioned, which is an irregular heartbeat. If that becomes too intense, the person's heart is not functioning properly, the blood is not getting where it needs to go, and it actually can lead to hospitalization or even death. So very serious issue. Also, too, with younger people, sometimes because they don't always have a good grip on social skills, they're still growing and still maturing, they're will sometimes engage in high-risk behaviors when on these products. And in doing so, the high-risk physical behaviors, high-risk sexual behaviors, and these can all have detrimental consequences.
So what's in them exactly? Is it just caffeine and sugar, or, are there some chemical additives?
There's a variety of different chemicals in the different products. Generally speaking, kind of across the board, there's an excessive amount of caffeine. Now, keep in mind that a normal 8-ounce cup of coffee contains about 100 to 150 milligrams of caffeine, sometimes 50 milligrams if one is drinking Kava or one of these other brands that has low caffeine or decaffeinated beverage. Often these energy drinks are containing twice this amount, 160 to 240 milligrams is not uncommon. So that's a lot of caffeine for a single dose. But in addition to that, it's the sugar. And these are laden with sugar, often a day's worth of sugar in one can. And some of the other chemicals are phenylalanine, which is an amino acid that can actually cause severe problems in susceptible people. And then there are all types of industrial chemicals. So these products are not healthy at all. And I just really recommend that people find healthy alternatives to increasing their energy versus consuming various products with all these unhealthy ingredients.
How can parents tell if their kids are abusing these on the sly?
I would look for changes in behavior. They may not be sudden, but they could be subtle changes, but look for changes in behavior, increased energy, lack of sleep, increased time out, a variety of different things that would be similar to if a parent were looking for an addiction to stimulants.
Does it curb food appetite?
It can, and there are individuals that use these products to attempt to lose weight. Again, very dangerous, and I'm just not a pill for every ill kind of doctor. So when I have patients come in, from teenagers to older folks wanting to lose weight, and then they ask about these products, I'm very quick to say, no, this just is really the wrong route to take. Why don't we have a healthy plant-based diet, drink lots of water? Why don't we exercise every day? Let's get a good night's sleep, and let's work on stress and those cognitions we mentioned earlier.
So, let's talk about some solutions, because we only have about a little under 5 minutes now, maybe 4.5 minutes left.
Okay.
So let's talk about some good solutions, exercise and diet. So you recommend a plant-based diet?
I do. My wife and I follow what is sort of loosely referred to as a flexitarian diet. So it's not completely vegetarian. We do like meat, and we enjoy occasionally having Mexican food. So we don't deprive ourselves. Again, we try to keep in balance. So for us, mostly vegetables and fruits work, but occasionally we like to go out and eat and maybe have a small steak or some Mexican food. So we generally have found that people are healthier and happier when they're following a mostly plant-based diet. I do recommend lots and lots of water every day. As a society, we're very dehydrated, and all of these products we're talking about dehydrate you. So lots and lots of water.
And what about thoughts, emotions, and attitudes?
Excellent. One has to really look at the motivation for drinking these products. Why do I, as an individual, feel I need to excel in terms of energy or push beyond my personal reserves? So I recommend that people think differently about why they feel compelled to overdo everything and commit also to relaxing, simplifying, saying no and slowing down. And that way they can minimize using these chemicals to run at full speed.
Are you a proponent, say, of like these white noise generators that some people use when they sleep to sort of mask sound?
Joseph, that's a great question. I have a variety of programs that sit on my smartphone that produce these types of sounds. Everybody has to find what works for them. Nothing works across the board for everyone. I have found that the white noise, or even less expensive, is running a fan sometimes in the background just for some noise to help block out some of the city sounds. Can do wonders in terms of lulling myself to sleep. But there are a variety of different programs. Some have new age kinds of music. There's many, many CDs that are available that take you on self-hypnosis journeys or suggestions to sleep. All kinds of really good materials out there these days. We're very fortunate.
I always noticed that an airplane's whir makes me sleepy.
It does, and I think it's because the sound is just a nice, steady sound of the air, and I've experienced the same thing. Just almost lulls me to sleep.
Then you get the pilot blasting off.
And then the pilot tells you that they're having to divert 2,000 miles.
Right, right. And what kind of spiritual practices do you recommend?
Again, this is up to the individual. Some people like to go to, say, church or a synagogue or another house of worship. That works for them. That's great. Others prefer to meditate. Others prefer, you know, yoga or prayer or charitable works, you know, caring for sick people, visiting people in the hospital, taking care of animals. So we all have to find what spiritual practice works best for us as individuals, and I really do feel that it's an individual situation. And then again, that rounds out, I believe, the rest of everything. Most of us find that it's helpful to have a sense of purpose in life, have a sense of direction in life, and I believe considering spiritual concepts, or at least doing some inner work, and that might be psychology work on you, can do wonders in terms of being able to implement some of these other strategies that we've discussed.
Do you have a website associated with you or your books?
I do. Thanks for asking. It's www.consciouslylivinghole.com.
Consciouslylivinghole.com.
And we invite people to come around and take a look.
Well, we'll have that a link to that on our Facebook page, too.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Dr. George Zagridis, co-author of Stop Feeling Tired, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you both so much. This has been an absolute honor and a pleasure, and let's be sure to do it again sometime.
Okay, and thank you so much.
Fantastic. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Food and Dining up next. And we return for today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, finally, Food and Dining Thursday is here.
It's an interesting combination from energy drinks to wine today.
Well, we're joined by chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. And Linda, looks like there's going to be some major wine tasting here.
Listen, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie.
Fred
Miami,
Tasker must be beside himself.
Miami is wine happy. There's wine festivals and competitions, are yearly events here. There are several of them. And they're all for good causes, too, so that's nice. One event coming up on April 4th is a gala for the American Fine Wine Competition. That's all American wines. And Shari Gurman is its creator, and she's here to tell us about American wines. Welcome, Shari Gurman.
Hi, Linda. Thank you so much for having me.
And also joining us is Chef Christina McCammer. She's from Bee Cellars in Napa Valley, and she's going to be participating in the event coming up. But she's also the winner of the fourth season of Hell's Kitchens. So Well, let's welcome Chef Christina McCammer. Welcome, Christina.
Good morning. How are you both?
Well, it's morning for you. It's afternoon for us.
I guess that's true, hey?
Yeah, hey. She's in Napa. And our favorite wine columnist, as Joe mentioned, is Fred Tasker, and he's joining us by Skype. And he writes the Wine Suggestions for My Dinner in Minutes column, and you can read Fred's column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, happy day for you.
Hey. It's wine day, so that makes me happy, and I also feel like I have to match the energy level of that previous guest.
Wish you were here, Fred.
And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any wine questions for us? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Do we have email today?
Radio@WLRN.org.
Okay. All right. Let's start with Shari. Shari Gurman, congratulations on the success of your American Fine Wine and
Thank you, Linda.
Food competition. Thanks. Just tell us what the competition is.
This is our sixth year. It's an invitational. The American Fine Wine Competition invites wineries from all over the country to participate. But as I said, it's an invitational, so we actually taste throughout the year. I work with another couple, Monty and Sarah Prizer, and we invite about 600 wines to participate. We have 24 judges, many of whom you know, sit over 2 days and taste over 600 wines, and then we award them medals.
Well, but so you're tasting 600 wines throughout the year?
Well,
lucky you were able to get here in one piece.
Well, we narrow it down to only inviting 600. But
so who are the winners this year? Who won?
Oh, we have, and every year it always amazes me because you never know who's going to win, and we have surprises. This year we had four. We have a best of show red, white, sparkling, and a dessert. And the best of show white wine was sort of the surprise this year. It was a 2009 pre-Riesling from Hagafen Cellars. It was kosher.
So a kosher wine.
Yeah, one best of show white.
Best of show this year.
Magnificent bottle of wine. The best of show red was a 2010 Pinot Noir from the Donham Estate. The best of show sparkling was an 08 from Mum in Napa. And the dessert wine was a 2011 late harvest Gewurztraminer from Castilla de Amorosa.
Well, that's wonderful.
But I have to say real quick, there was a lot of double gold medals. I mean, we had 100 double gold medal winners, and one of which was B-Sellers, Chef Christina's wines.
Chef Christina, you're one. You won. Tell us, you're a winning chef. You won on Hell's Kitchen, and now you're working at a Napa winery. So you've gone from cooking to tasting wine. How do you go about pairing the food and wine?
Oh, goodness. Well, the two, I think, naturally go well together. And rule number one that I tell anybody is always drink what you like. If you think it's a great pairing, then it is. Now, of course, that moving forward, there are some general guidelines that I like to follow. But the best way to learn about it and to explore is trial and error, because everybody's palate is different. Some people have more of a sweet palate. I prefer things a little bit salty. So it's really kind of been a fun exploratory activity out here. And, there is no nightlife in Napa. So what are we doing?
Sounds to me like you've got big nightlife out there with all the wine.
That's more of an afternoon life.
So what do you do? Take one element of the food and see what wine, like if it's got a sweet or acid, component to it?
So what I typically do with guests is break it down in its simplest form. So, of course, I could tell you that this rack of lamb goes really great with Cabernet, but what do you do if you don't have a rack of lamb on hand? So we use three simple components, apple, lemon, and salt, and those represent the three most common flavors in American foods. So the apple represents sweet, the lemon represents sour, and salt, of course, represents salty. So we'll take any wine, be it white or red, sweet or dry, and we'll try each individual component by itself, try it with the wine, and see how does the wine change. Do you like it better? Do you not like it better? And that's how we can move forward with a good pairing. So here at B-Sellers, we're known for doing Cabernet-based blends, so some really bold, structured red wines with a good amount of tannin. So for a lot of folks, that lemon, surprisingly, that acid, sour, is the best pairing because it really brings down the tannins and brings out all the fruit in the wine. But, of course, it's different with every single wine.
You know, what I always find difficult is to match wine with something like Thanksgiving dinner, where you have 35 different foods on the table.
Thanksgiving dinner is kind of fun, actually. We go through a lot of wine on that day. But I always call these sort of wines crossover wines. So those are your kind of down-the-middle Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and anything that sparkles are going to be great for any of those hard to pair. You know, and even not only Thanksgiving, but Easter. We're right around the corner from Easter brunch. And so the same thing on your table. If you're going with a Chardonnay, a Pinot Noir, or a sparkling wine, then you're going to be all set.
Well, and it's a good excuse to serve more than one wine that way, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sparkling wine is for breakfast here.
Oh, you're going to be Fred's best friend because
absolutely.
Fred
BFFs never forever.
Never has a show without something that's sparkling. But let me tell you, we've got your bestseller wine here.
We have the Petite Syrah here.
The Petite Syrah, and Char is about to pour it.
Perfect.
To see. Wow. Oh, my God.
Oh.
I love the sound effects. I'm getting
That's quite a pour.
Well, just enough to fill the bottom of the glass.
Oh, my God.
What you guys are about to taste there, this one is really special. So we're known for doing blended wines. That being said, if we have a great vintage of one particular varietal, we'll do just a small run. And I think that one we only did 150 cases. And really, it doesn't get out of California. So bribe you to come see me here for our wine club. And that Petite Syrah actually grows in Frediani Vineyard, which is in Calistoga. It's just across the street from our home. Old vines. They're almost 60 years old. And you just get these really beautiful characteristics to it. I mean, of course, it's big and it's bold, but almost get some sweeter blueberry pie, wildflower honey. You may even get some kind of tobacco, tar, mm-hmm. asphalt.
Well, Bonnie, why don't you swirl?
Incredible wine.
Why don't you swirl?
Okay, I'll swirl.
Linda, are you swirling?
I understand it's been cold there in Florida.
A little bit.
That's amazing because the Petite Syrah is best in the wintertime.
So it's a good day for Petite Syrah.
Yes, right. We've got a phone call coming in. And it's Anthony in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Anthony. You're on the air.
Hello. Good afternoon, ladies. I'm on my way. Actually, we're on our way back home from Orlando to Fort Lauderdale, and I was just lucky enough to dial in and be able to talk to you and chat with you briefly. So, hello.
Hello. Do you have a quick question for us?
We do. My wife and I were big wine fans, and my wife, Denise, a big Chardonnay fan. I'm a big Pinot Noir fan, and I'm always trying to convince her to come over to the Pinot Noir side. Any suggestions?
All right, Anthony, we're getting a bit of back feed from your car there, so we'll answer you off the air.
Drive carefully.
I have an idea.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you know we have the event coming up, and there's one way to taste over 600 wines, and probably 20% of them are Chards, and probably 30% are Pinots. Come to the gala. Taste all the Chardonnays and Pinots that you want.
But let's
keep records.
And keep records, absolutely.
Absolutely. Take notes. That's the main thing that people don't do, and then the next day they love the wine, but they don't know what it was.
Okay, pictures are good, though. The phone. You now have these smartphones where you just have to take a picture.
But let's help him out because he's having this discussion with his wife.
Yes, true. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why they have to decide one or the other. Why don't they just drink both?
That's right. Absolutely.
Christina, what do you think?
Well, I definitely agree. Drink both. More is more. However, I think that what could really help bridge that gap is maybe food, because a lot of red wines become more approachable once you introduce food. So some great foods with Pinot Noir are mushrooms, duck, mm-hmm. turkey, as we were just talking about, sort of, you know, things that have a little bit of body to them, but not so much as red meat or steak. So, you know, maybe try sautéing up some mushrooms and see what she thinks then.
Well, talking about mushrooms, I understand that when you come down here for the gala, which is next Thursday,
mm-hmm.
You're going to be cooking, and I think you're making a mushroom dish, is that right?
I am. You know, I kind of got put into this box. The other chefs got all the good ingredients before me. I think one is doing a lobster risotto.
Uh-huh.
Chef Norman Van Aken is doing something with shrimp. The other chef gets the meat dish. And I've got to do something wine-friendly, but unfortunately I'm stuck in the world of vegetables.
But that's not a bad place to be.
It's not a bad place, you know, and so I wanted to do something that was fun outside of the box. I didn't want to do, you know, a salad. So we're actually doing a really complicated dish, and it's a royal trumpet mushroom carpaccio. And, again, a great dish with those white Chardonnays, beautiful with reds. It takes several days to make, which is unfortunate, but it'll be a lot of fun. Three different kinds of mushrooms. We're using the royal trumpets, which are my favorite because the stem is just as delicious as the cap. We're using some shiitakes and then some really small mushrooms called hanshimji, which you may have had in some Asian dishes. And then some arugula with that peppery mustard flavor and some pine nuts. It should be a lot
of
fun.
Now, are the mushrooms cooked in this?
They are. We confit the mushrooms. So we'll make an oil that's one part olive oil, one part blended oil. Add some aromatics, some rosemary, some thyme, some garlic, some shallot.
Oh, my God. You're making us
all watering here.
Good.
We're going to have to take a break.
It's payback for the wine you're enjoying. Okay. I'm so jealous.
All right.
But we basically slow cook them in that oil for about 15 minutes until they're cooked all the way through. So it's a very gentle cooking method.
Oh, my God. Sounds wonderful. Well, we're talking about the American Fine Wine Competition with Shari Gurman and Chef Christina McCammer. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're with Shari Gurman. She's the chair of the American and creator of the American Fine Wine Competition, and we also have Chef Christina McCammer with us. She's from Bee Cellars in Napa Valley, and she's going to be participating in the event. She was also the winner of the fourth season of Hell's Kitchen. And there's another wine event. I started by saying that Miami is wine happy. There's a wine and food event taking place in Fort Lauderdale on April 5th. That's next Friday. And that's at the Museum of Discovery and Science. It's the 18th Spirits and Culinary Celebration. And it's going to showcase food from over 50 restaurants in that area and over 200 wines from around the world. And also, they have craft beers and spirits. For more information, contact the Museum of Discovery and Science in Fort Lauderdale. Okay, so now we're going to eat. We're going to have dinner in minutes.
Finally.
It's time. You guys have been already gobbled it up, I noticed. Yes? Okay, this is a perfect dish for this holiday weekend, but it's really good for any weekday night. And it's mint pesto lamb with garlic potatoes, and it's made with a lamb steak. Now, this is the cut I really like because it's a slice of lamb cut right from the leg. And it makes a steak about 3/4 inch thick, and it's got that round slice of bone in the center. Really juicy and tender, and only takes a few minutes to cook. Sometimes it's displayed in the meat case, but or else you can just ask them to cut one for you.
Do you want it on a little bit on the rare side, or do you want it fully cooked?
Well, you like yours more well done, don't you?
With lamb, yeah. Beef, no. But
we like it well. Medium rare, how's that?
Okay.
With you, Linda.
Thank you, Fred. And all you're going to do is broil this steak for about 5 minutes, turn it for a couple of minutes for Joe a little longer, and then, about 135 degrees, it's done. And then the mint sauce. There's a mint sauce. Now, this recipe, by the way, is in today's Miami Herald. The mint sauce is very simple and easy to make, but pressed for time, open a jar of mint jelly. That couldn't be easier.
That's kind of passé, though, isn't it? The mint jelly?
No.
Okay.
If you're in a hurry, it's never passé, all right? Okay. And then there's garlic potatoes that are made in the microwave. All right, Joe, on my website today, here's a recipe for you that's not passé. It's the same cut of lamb, but you serve it with a pesto sauce over it. So that's really good. And that's at dinnerinminutes.com. Also, please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, are we drinking something else today?
Yes, we are. No doubt about it at all. When Easter comes, the festival dinner that you have with it is usually a big chunk of lamb, as you say, or of ham, unless, of course, you're a vegetarian or even a vegan, and then you have to come up with something different. So, first, looking at ham, now ham is pink meat, so reason would say that if you use white wine with white meat and red wine with red meat, you could use pink wine with pink meat, which is to say rosé, and astonishingly, this actually works. It appears that there is order in the universe. It depends on what the preparation is. If it's a savory preparation, like a straight baked ham with a spice rub or 20 cloves of garlic or something like that, you might want a nice dry rosé. And the one that was in the contest that Shari was running, the V-Cellars Bellamy Rosé, sounds like a perfect match
for that. By the way, we've got that here. We're drinking
we
that
do.
As well.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, you go out and get a ham sandwich with it.
Yeah, it's from Santa Barbara County, and it's really a beautiful... I agree with you using it for the holiday. It's a wonderful bottle of wine.
Yeah. Now, if you had it slathered with honey or brown sugar or something like that, you might want a little sweeter rosé to go with the sweetness there. Now, leg of lamb. I have always said that the perfect wine with lamb is red Rioja from Spain. Or if you want to, as Emerald says, take it up a notch, you could pour a Ribera del Duero, which is the same grape, Sangiovese, but it comes from Tempranillo. Yeah. But it comes from the next province over, and it's considered to be kind of Rioja on steroids. It's a big, powerful wine. Great stuff with lamb. Now, if you're a vegetarian, you could do a nice veggie lasagna, or if you're a vegan, you could actually copy the Passover Seder dish I wrote about last year and make a nice rolled roast of tofu. In either case, a nice hearty Chardonnay would go with that, or even that dry Riesling from Ohio that you were talking about. Oh, and one last thing. If you're trying to eat up those eggs from the Easter egg hunt, now eggs are typically considered to be one of the most difficult things to match with wine, but I think the answer there is that the light sulfur touch you get with the yolks needs a crisp, acidic wine. And Linda, guess what that would be?
Sparkle. Can I guess?
Little
bubbles on your tongue. Bubbles on your tongue.
As I said, there is order in the universe.
Happy Easter, everyone. By the way, the Riesling that you mentioned, we've got that here as well, Shari. Tell us the name of it again.
The Hagafen? Oh, actually, we have with us here now, we have Ferrante, Golden Bunches. That's from Ohio.
From Ohio. So as I mentioned, there's wine in almost every state.
Yes, every state in the country does grow grapes.
Right. So tell us once again if people wanted to participate in your gala and taste all these wines.
Oh, my goodness. Come. It's April 4th at the Boca Raton Resort. They can go to the website, AmericanFineWineCompetition.com. Next week, we've probably got a few tables left. But 600 wines are going to be poured. You can taste so much, and the food's going to be amazing.
And there's a full dinner. It's not a walk-on.
Oh, no, it's a full dinner. It's a sit-down
dinner.
In fact, we have 20 winemakers coming in who are going to be pouring their best-of-shows and best-of-class wines. B-Sellers is being represented. Their Blend 24 won best-of-class red wine. Winemakers coming from Hagafen and Donham and all the wineries that took the highest awards are going to be there pouring from these little mini tasting
now
rooms.
This charity.
Yes.
It
is a benefit.
Yep. It's a benefit, sorry. So who's benefiting?
Diabetes Research Institute and uh-huh. Four Pets Charities are both the benefiting charities. In the last 6 years, we've raised over $500,000 for charity through the silent auction, the live auction, and this year we have something cool called a cork and bottle auction.
Which means, what does that
mean? Oh, okay. So we, many of our judges donated 2 bottles of wine from their private cellars, like Charlie Adarola, Jennifer Simonetti, who's a master of wine, Virginia Phillip from The Breakers.
They've terrific. All.
You pick a cork. You make a donation to the charity. You pull a cork. The number on the cork matches the bottle.
And you get to have that bottle.
Yep.
That's fantastic. Before we go, we only have a half a minute left, but I can't leave without asking Christina. What was it like to be the winner of Hell's Kitchen?
Oh, goodness. Your life changes,
uh-huh.
for sure. I was in culinary school in New York at the time, so I still had, after filming, I had a semester left. And, of course, I couldn't tell anybody, so it really stinks on graduation day when you have the best job in the world and you can't tell anybody.
But and everyone's saying to you, what are you going to do? And you say, I don't know yet.
I don't know. I'm
so
not
funny.
Quite sure. After it aired, it was great. I was able to move to Los Angeles, an incredible culinary epicenter, work with some really great chefs, and then it brought me up here. So a natural progression from food to wine. So it's been very exciting.
Okay. Well, that's congratulations. And glad that it all worked out so well for you.
We're so excited that Christina's coming in. Really excited.
It's going to be really terrific.
Yeah.
Well, we've had another very, very tasty, tasty week. Shari Gurman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Linda.
And for the wine.
Welcome. Come taste all 600.
Well, I don't know. The American Fine Wine Competition Gala is April 4th. It's at the Boca Raton Resort. And for more information, go to AmericanFineWineCompetition.com. Christina McCammer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and I will see you next week.
All right. Come on down and see us. Fred Tasker, wine columnist. Great advice, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Joseph Cooper, Bonnie, you ate well today.
Indeed,
you're just having a great day.
Thank you, Linda.
Okay.
And well, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Next week, we're going to be talking with celebrity restaurateur Michael Mina. He's got some news for us. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps up today's edition. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Find free audio archives and digital downloads of this and past programs at our website, WLRN.org. And more information, book links, staff photos, and discussion at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, of course, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we return with business and legal professor David Schultz to discuss his book, American Politics in the Age of Ignorance, Why Lawmakers Choose Belief Over Research. Now the good, the bad, and the ugly calendar for March 28th. On this day, 1973, 40 years ago, Wilt Chamberlain retires from pro basketball. 1,045 games over 14 years, he never fouled out. He was also the center of the 33-win Laker team, that great streak. Chamberlain died in 1999. Also on this day in 1984, 29 years ago, in the middle of the night, owner Robert Irsay moves the cherished Baltimore Colts football team to Indianapolis. They felt threatened by eminent domain. On this day in 1995, 18 years ago, Grammy-winning singer Lyle Lovett and actress Julia Roberts announce a marital separation after 21 months. And we leave with a thought from Wilt Chamberlain, still the only NBA player to reach 100 single-game points. He speaks of his classic battles against the Celtics. Quote, Bill Russell helped make my dream a better dream, because when you play with the best, you know you have to play your best. This is Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.